This is Report to Wyoming.
This show targets local issues that matter right here in Natrona County, where I talk to real people about their thoughts and ideas. For this episode, I talked to the Master Gardeners. I did this last spring as well, but this time I'm with Donna Hoffman and Lynn Dampman. Both have been Master Gardeners for over two decades, so it was really nice getting to pick their brains about Wyoming's unique growing season.
Someone coerced me years ago. In 2000, I became a Master Gardener, but someone coerced me into it and never looked back.
Did you have a green thumb at that point, or was it a totally new adventure?
Yeah, no, I had gardened with my dad, kind of grew up gardening a little bit, didn't particularly like it when I had to pick grasshoppers off of the veggies in the garden, and then I got into composting with my dad, and so, yeah, I had quite a bit of gardening experience, had a big garden when I got out of school and had my own place, had a pretty good-sized garden. So it's always kind of been in my blood, I guess.
How long have you been in Casper?
All my life.
Okay, so then you know how to garden for our climate, right?
Yeah.
And how did you get involved, Donna?
I was hired as the Master Gardener Coordinator in 2002, so I had been from Casper and moved down to Laramie to go to school and stayed for 17 years, and then finally was hired using my degree, so I moved back to Casper, and part of that job was being a Master Gardener Coordinator.
Do we have any idea how many Master Gardeners there are in Wyoming?
We have about 1,300 that are on the state reporting system, but not all of them are active, and so I don't have the number off the top of my head on how many are active and inactive, that kind of thing.
Okay, but that's still a pretty good number.
It is.
And in Natrona County, is it, would you say it's a social thing that people get together a lot for events? How do you guys really organize as a group? I know there's a couple big events coming up, but throughout the year?
They have meetings once a month, and then committees meet off and on throughout the year in preparation for their various events. They start out with a minimum of 40 hours of training, and here in Natrona County we do about 63 hours of volunteer training ahead of them becoming an active Master Gardener. And then we ask them to do 40 hours of volunteer time their first year, and then they become an active member. And after that, each year after that, we ask them to do 25 hours of volunteer time and then get 10 hours of continuing education. And they can get that continuing education in anything that is horticultural or garden related. So everybody has their own interests and topics related to gardening that they would like to learn more about. So everybody kind of delves off into their own part of horticulture and what they want to learn more about.
Yeah, even preparing for this, thinking about all the different questions I could ask, there are so many. Garden just means so many things. How much time are Master Gardeners spending just helping community members with their own specific gardening problems?
A lot,
yeah. Various Master Gardeners volunteer different levels. We have some Master Gardeners who have volunteered over 300 hours in one year. Others kind of do the minimum, and they have their favorite project that they make sure that they volunteer for every year. And they do that one event, maybe one or two events through the year, and get their hours in that way. So there's a variety of ways that the volunteers can get their volunteer activities in. And they usually find a buddy or a small group of people that they like to work with, and that group oftentimes will work on the same project several years in a row.
Oh, sure. Is there a certain question that comes up all the time as a Master Gardener, Lynn? From community members, I'm thinking. Things like, how do I dot, dot, dot?
Man, it just varies so much. I think a lot of people are confused by how to water, even at something as simple as watering their garden. But boy, for just one thing, I hear it all, because I'm the events that I'm interested in, farmers market, and where I do interact with the public. Yeah, they have all kinds of questions. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think because everybody has their own interests, and then there's varying levels of what they've already experienced, what they've had successes with, and what they've had failures with, whether it be for a vegetable garden, a flower garden, they're wanting to grow trees, they have orchids in their house, you know, whatever the different thing is. Everybody has their own topic. And then based on that, we have variations in the weather from the different seasons. And then here in central Wyoming, as you probably know, we have variations in the weather from year to year. So the weather has a lot to do with what is a problem this year, this month, and then the weather could change from being, you know, warm most of the month in April to maybe rainy most of the month in May, and that leads us into the summer with a different set of situations, as opposed to if it was rainy in April last year and then warm in May going into the summer months. So we can either start out dry with little disease problems, or we can start out wet with lots of disease problems. And then we have a lot of people that have moved here over the years. I know right after Katrina, the hurricane, we had a lot of people move here from Louisiana. We've had a lot of people move here from Michigan in particular. And those two states, people don't usually even own garden hoses. They move here and they wonder why their lawn is brown. Well, when we only get 11 and a half inches of rain and it's not being supplemented, the lawn is telling you, need more water.
Another thing I wanted to ask too is in the springtime, we get a lot of tulips and daffodils, which are beautiful, and I love them. But what other kind of spring? I'm thinking about seasonality, and you want color for the whole growing season. So what other things maybe do people not think about for the spring?
I think a lot of people think about all kinds of things in the spring. It's usually the fall season that maybe gets left out of what to plant. And there are plants that bloom throughout the season, so you do want to kind of keep an eye on when they bloom and what's blooming in your yard and make selections that will fill in on those times where maybe you're a little bit sparse in the blooms in your garden. But looking and reading the labels, everybody has their own color scheme, their own favorites of flowers. Some of my favorites are pansies, and the name doesn't really suit them because they're pretty tough. They can take the early spring, and oftentimes they'll come up through the snow, especially when we have warm days. And then they may go dormant in the middle of summer, but then they also can handle things in the fall, and you get another flush of color and lots of blooms leading into the cold temperatures of late fall. So they're a great plant for both ends of the season. But looking at plants that bloom in the fall, I think is we tend to get tired of gardening because it, even though we have a short season, it's pretty active and intense when we are growing. And I think by the time the fall blooming plants are coming out, everybody's kind of been tired of going to the garden center and looking for things that bloom in the fall and enhancing the garden for those last few months. And a lot of times I think we think of fall colors for our trees and shrubs, and that tends to be enough color for the garden, but there are lots of plants that bloom in the fall. One of my favorites is a shrub. It's the dark night
spirea. Well,
but
that's a Caryopteryx.
Caryopteryx, yeah. There's others, but it's a pretty dramatic darker blue color. And we tend to have lots of yellows and oranges and reds in the fall, so the blue is a nice enhancement to those traditional fall colors.
I always think of sunflowers.
Mm-hmm.
Coneflowers, do those do? Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love, they're vibrant too.
Yeah, and they will bloom through the summer and into the fall. Yep.
Okay. I'm doing lots of coneflower this year.
Well, and if you're just starting a garden, I would recommend when you see something in someone else's yard and you really like it, don't hesitate to stop and ask them, because they would be happy to share that information with you. And same for spring and for fall. You know, if you see something you like and don't get in too big of a rush, and just be patient and check out with your neighbors and other friends.
I'm seeing these over by Grant Street. I went and I took my daughters to go get donuts the other day at the market there. But these tiny little purple flowers, and they just really take off. But they're not as big as like lavender.
Do you know? Hyacinth.
Probably grape hyacinth.
And they're a bulb.
Yep.
Okay. So these, would you need to plant them in the fall then?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Most of the spring blooming bulbs and many of our spring bulb blooming perennials or shrubs need the cold period to help set the blossom. So they need to go through the cold temperatures, exposure outdoors in order to set buds.
I do want to talk about trees a little bit. So I saw some trees for sale, these little apple trees. And so you get this like sapling and you go plant it, $40, I think. Is there a real good probability those are going to survive? I felt a little skeptical.
Depends on probably where you get it.
I know. I didn't want to say. I don't want to call this specific location out. So that I can roll with that, though. It does depend then on the quality of the sapling. But is it besides like maybe crab apples, likely that you're going to be able to maybe have plums or cherries and Casper?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure you can. The reputation of the source where you get your stock, the local nurseries know the area and they know what to get in where, like the big box stores, they get stuff that there's no way it's going to grow here, you know?
Right.
And or unless you've got a little microclimate in your backyard that might be a different zone. We're pretty much zone 4. They say zone 5. Some like to think it's zone 5, but with our winds and cold temps in the winter, we're, safe to be zone 4, pick zone 4.
Yeah.
There's plums and there's cherries and there's, but you have to get the right varieties that are suited for zone 4. And again, if you ask your neighbors what kind they've got, if you see that they're actually producing apples, ask them what kind they've got. They probably know. But otherwise, the internet is a good source to check that out too. But there's other factors too, like the pH. Are there trees and shrubs that...
Some of our plants are more suited to the eastern states because their soils are more acidic than ours, and ours are quite alkaline. Our water is actually alkaline instead of neutral. And so we want to grow plants that are suitable for our soil conditions, our temperatures,
the wind,
encouraging people to plant things that are drought resistant. And then we have that real drying wind. Usually one of the things that causes wind to happen or because of the wind happening, we get warm-ups. So those Chinook winds can be very drying to plant material. So if you're talking about perennial plants, they are usually less expensive and a less long-term investment in your landscape. And you might find a spot where she mentioned a microclimate in your yard. You can get by with a perennial that might be zone 5, maybe even zone 6 if you have a big rock, or you can plant it next to a brick wall or next to a cement sidewalk or something. But when you're talking trees and shrubs, they have to deal with all of the weather that we get thrown at us every year for years and years and years, decades even. And so you definitely want to invest in plants that are suited to zone 4 because we almost every year get down to at least minus 27. And that's right in the middle of the zone 4 cold hardiness description.
That makes sense. What kind of trees are your favorites, I should say, for Casper?
I like the Buckeye. They're not native to here, but there's few enough of them around that we're diversifying our landscape and have the Buckeye. But there's also lindens are a really nice choice for around here.
What does a linden look like?
It's real beautiful pyramidal shape.
Yeah, the canopy is often described as teardrop shaped.
Yeah.
Okay. Quite pointy at the top. They're very uniform. So if you get the same variety, they'll usually have very similar shape on all the trees that you put together. Very drought, well, they can be quite drought resistant. They do need to be watered, but they're very disease resistant as well. So they have very few problems. My favorite thing about the linden is their flowers. Their flowers are very fragrant, and I would say that it's almost an intoxicating scent because it is quite strong. Oh. Yeah. So
how tall do they get?
Oh, there's different varieties. So there can be some that get in the range of 30 foot tall, and then there are some that can get in the range of 60 foot tall.
Wow, okay.
But around here in Zone 4, if you're looking at the specifications for a tree and it says 30 to 50, pick the 30. I mean, expect the 30 rather than the 50. Hmm.
Things are going to grow a lot slower because we have a short growing season, and they put on so many inches of growth one year, and then they go dormant, and then they put on another few inches of growth the next year, and then they go dormant. Whereas places that have longer growing seasons, they will grow a longer growth amount in one year.
Now, I wanted to talk to you guys about vegetable and flower pairing. Like, if you wanted to put maybe the two together, do they play nicely or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely do. Yeah.
There's actually authors that have written books about planting your vegetables with your flowers or planting herbs with your flowers. So they make a nice combination.
Or herbs with your vegetables.
Right, yes.
Yeah, there's the... It's supposed to, like, ward off the bugs or prevent, you know, some bugs from overtaking certain crops. Yeah, it's a really good idea.
Are there any maybe plants that don't play nicely together?
There actually are.
There's always.
companion planting lists available online. And because there's a resource we can look at, I don't ever memorize those lists.
Yeah.
But we just had one of our master gardeners give a workshop for a group at her church. And we planted some containers with companion plants, things that do partner together. But she had a printout of the sheet, and she could talk about all the different plants that you wouldn't want to partner together because they will actually cause dwarfing or cause one plant or the other not to succeed by growing with each other. There are also plants that will draw in pests that will then be a problem for some of the things that they don't grow well together with. So it's a good idea to check those kinds of things before you do a lot of pairings with
different
plants.
But the chart is easily found online or out at the
end. Companion planting charts are available all over the place online.
It's a thing.
I know I've done mint before, and I found that mint just took over everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, if you put mint in a pot and then put that pot in around your veggie garden, then that will keep it at bay, keep
but
it from overtaking.
But it has to be segregated,
basically. It needs to have a barrier around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the herbs are really, I feel like they're trending is the word, right? They are. It's everybody's doing it. They're all growing herbs these days. Are there certain herbs that maybe we don't think, like the common ones are cilantro, rosemary, thyme,
basil.
Oh, I love the smell of basil. Mm-hmm. Are there herbs that maybe we don't always think about?
Oh, I just recently bought a summer savory plant. We've had people talk about it. We periodically get people that will donate it to the plant sale, but I've never found one. I was at a meeting in Iowa, and we went to a farmer's market, and I found one there and brought it home. And this weekend, I was at a nursery out of town because I was attending a garden expo in another county, and I bought hyssop. And it's one of the herbs that's mentioned in the Bible. And we have the flowering hyssop that's a part of some of the drought-resistant plants, but I'd never seen the herb, the cooking herb, hyssop, in a nursery and brought one of those home with me last weekend. So, yeah, those are some interesting.
I wonder what that smells like. It's probably trying to describe a color.
Well, it's in a mint family, so it does have that kind of pungent smell to it, but some of them, the different mints, have a variety of undertones.
Okay. Do you grow herbs?
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is basil, and I like parsley because I like to, I grow them inside, though, and put them right in the windowsill so that I've got them handy to snip off while I'm cooking. I guess I use those the most.
Can you do it year-round?
Uh-huh. inside, yeah.
That's what I need. Okay, because I'll do some herbs in the summer, but that's it.
You can even start some seeds inside in a little pot in the middle of winter if you've got the seeds.
Rosemary's one of those herbs. I have family in the Las Vegas area, and rosemary is planted as a landscape plant like we plant junipers here. And they grow all over the place in Las Vegas. You can grow them outside in the summer, but you need to take them inside because they are not hardy for our winters. And so rosemary is another one that if you like to cook with it, it's a good one to bring in for the winter or start a plant so you have it indoors.
Cilantro is another one that you just can't get it powdered or dried. You can't freeze it. You really have to have it. So I spend a lot of money when we do at least once a week or twice a week, like Mexican dishes and soups and stuff. So I want to try some cilantro. It's fickle, though. I haven't had a lot of luck.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the problem I find is that they go to seed real quickly.
Yeah.
So you have to keep on top of the, you know, snip off the blooms.
Mm-hmm.
So that they don't go to seed.
And chives.
Chives.
They can be so beautiful, those flowers, but you can't. They're inedible, right? You can't eat them after they flower, right?
Well, no. They'll just be a little bitter.
Yeah.
They might be a little bitter. But they're still. But, boy, they'll take over your yard.
Yeah. They can be quite aggressive planted in the garden.
Oh, okay. Good to know as well. Mm-hmm.
And you snip off the flower, the seed heads, and boy, they just pop right back up if you don't keep on top of them.
They do. I gave up last year, and I just said, well, they're pretty, and moved on. But, yeah, I like thyme, not to take up too much of this conversation with herbs, but thyme, I think, is really pretty, even as a centerpiece, and it just smells good.
Mm-hmm. And there are lots of varieties of that, too. They work really well even in areas that are a little tougher in the garden. So I like to plant them between paving stones to fill in the soil space between paving stones. And they can take the traffic of being walked on. And then there's, you know, there's woolly thyme, there's mother of thyme, there's rosy thyme, there's lemon thyme. So all kinds of different flavors that you can get just from the species of thyme.
And they smell good when you step on them.
Yeah.
I love that smell. I'm trying to do some chamomile.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Is this possible?
Yes, and chamomile is actually one of those plants that some places is considered a weed. So it can very easily go to seed and is quite aggressive in the garden if not kept under control. So keeping the flowers snipped off of it and using those flowers in your teas, saving them or disposing of them either way, but then you keep the plant from spreading from your yard to your neighbor's yard to all the way down the block.
I recently made the mistake of buying some cheap bird food that came with sunflower seeds and who knows what other seeds, and it was brought to my attention that those seeds will likely spread and that I'll be pulling up sunflowers on the lawn later this summer.
Yeah, again, that's one of those things that the lower the price on it, the more likelihood of something that's going to spread being in it. So investing in a higher priced, a higher quality bird seed, you can shop for bird seed that is targeted at the birds that you want in your yard or that you know are in your yard. And then, like I say, the lower priced seeds are going to be ones that they distribute all across the country. And you may not even have those birds that are the ones that eat it in your area because we don't have all of the birds all over the country.
I get a lot of magpies, which isn't my goal.
Usually not your goal for watching the birds out the window.
No. As far as a butterfly garden, or I should say growing local or native plants that are going to maybe benefit the environment, what kind of recommendations do you have?
Oh, man. There are so many. Where do I start? Let's see. There's even shrubs, some flowering shrubs, but flowers. Gosh, where do I start, Donna?
Milkweed?
Yeah, milkweed.
That's a thing?
Okay, milkweed is the host plant for the monarch butterfly, for one. And there's different kinds of milkweed. I've got an orange. It's an Asclepias tuberosa. It's an orange milkweed. And it is my favorite, but showy milkweed. But there's Caryopteris.
Mm-hmm.
There's your coneflower.
Liatris.
Liatris. Mm-hmm. Yeah, liatris. Uh-huh.
What's liatris?
It's a tall, spiky purple flower. It usually starts blooming at the top and comes down from the top. And it's another flower that people that grow flowers for cut flower gardens will also grow, but it is a native and is attractant to butterflies.
Yeah.
Is this the one you see in bouquets? It's kind of like dried and...
Not usually dried, but it can be. Okay. Usually fresh. And like you say, it's a purple spike and it blooms from the top down.
Hmm. Okay. Very cool.
Let's see. What other flowers?
There are people that are very dedicated to planting the natives here. So anything from penstemon to the evening primroses that are out on the prairie, cactus flowers, all of those things that were here long before we started bringing in plants from other parts of the country or plant parts of the world. And then there are people that are willing to plant plants that are from other regions of the globe that are similar to our growing environment. And so there's a variation of how far from right where you are is kosher for each gardener to plant. Some people really want things that are native to Natrona County. Of course, native to the top of Casper Mountain is different than native to the sand dunes north of the river.
Of course, yeah. Have you guys already had your convention, the annual big expo, I think?
The Master Gardener Conference is this Saturday.
I think a good end note would be to ask you what you two personally, what your goals are in your spaces and your gardens.
At my age right now, I'm looking for less maintenance, but I've got a pretty big garden, pretty big area that I'm gardening. So I'm trying to, instead of having everything all spread out, I'm trying to contain it into beds and hopefully get it to be a little more manageable. And as far as my veggie gardening, I got a couple of raised beds, which are my height so that I can stand at them, and it's easier to garden, easier to harvest. So just the, you know, adjusting for my age. And
I love that you're still doing it though. What's your favorite vegetable to grow?
Tomatoes. Okay. Tomatoes and cabbage. I like cabbage because I like to make sauerkraut.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.